Hello, welcome to the Energy Question with David Blackman. I'm your host, David Blackman, and my very special guest today is Teague Egan, the dynamic CEO and founder of EnergyX, a very innovative lithium extraction company based, well, I guess your headquarters is in Puerto Rico, isn't it? But your research headquarters is in Austin, Texas, correct, Teague?
Yep, that's correct.
Well, how you doing, man? Before we get started, I want to just remind everyone that Teague was our special guest the very first episode of the Energy Question last August. We've done 26 episodes now, so we're half a year in, and I thought it'd be a great time to catch up for a quick update and see where things are with EnergyX. Teague, I understand you're in Houston today.
Yeah, you know, I'm in Houston for CERAWeek. It's one of the biggest energy conferences that's out there. It used to be the oil and gas conference, now turned into all types of energy. And, you know, out here for different meetings and stuff like that. So
awesome. I was actually planning on being there myself this week, but had some conflicts come up and couldn't do it. So I'm kind of jealous. I'm sitting here in my little studio at my house here in Mansfield, Texas.
We could have done it
Texas.
In person.
Yeah. So before we get started on our discussion about lithium and where things are headed with the transition, give everyone a reminder. We have a lot more viewers now than we did last August. And just give everyone a quick 2-minute synopsis of EnergyX, why you created the company, where you're heading with it. And the technology you're working on, which is really the key thing here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, congratulations on being 26 episodes deep. You know, I think it's pretty cool that I was the first, and to see how far the Energy Question has come. Congratulations to you on that.
Thank you.
As far as EnergyX, for the new viewers, that may not have seen the first episode that, you know, we did together. EnergyX is solving the problem of the lithium supply chain and bottlenecks around lithium production, lithium being one of the most important materials that goes into rechargeable batteries. So today, and for the past, decade, lithium production has been really inefficient, and that's mostly because until the last couple of years, our society has not needed that much lithium. So there was never an importance around improving or innovating the production methods or manufacturing processes to produce lithium. All of a sudden, we need way more lithium than the current supply can handle. And the solution to increase the supply is not just to multiply the current way that it's done, but it's to fundamentally change the way that lithium is produced so that we can produce larger quantities of lithium more efficiently in a more cost-effective manner. So EnergyX is addressing these problems, or trying to figure out solutions to these problems. And the way that we're doing that is by innovating in a sector that's called direct lithium extraction. So more efficient ways that we can process brine, which is the form in which lithium is found. Lithium is found as salt that's dissolved into water that are called brines. Separating this lithium out of the brine into a refined battery grade ready material that is the lithium that is purchased for batteries. So that's what EnergyX does. And that's kind of the high level summary of our company.
Yeah. And so, historically, when you're extracting it from brine, it's been this very long, arduous process of evaporating the brine, the evaporating the water, separating the salts that way. Your technology is more of a membrane kind of technology, and which really speeds up the process by, I can't remember what the factor is, but some incredible factor, correct?
Yeah, so membranes are actually one of our technologies. We've developed an end-to-end solution for companies that membranes are a part of that process. They do a very critical unit operation within the process, but we also use solvent extraction technologies that we've developed in-house, as well as ion absorption technologies. And all three of those technologies combine together to create this end-to-end process that can take and extract lithium from brine and refine it into battery-grade lithium material.
Fantastic. So when we talked last August, lithium prices were quite elevated at the time. We had a big drop in the price around October, and the price stayed down for several weeks. Now it's come back up and, you know, kind of still hovering at a fairly high price. I wonder, what is your view on the current state of lithium supply globally? I mean, is the market amply supplied right now, recognizing that it's going to have to grow rapidly into the future?
The market is, price is the variable factor that meets makes the supply and the demand meet, right?
Right.
All else equal, the demand is way, way higher than the supply. Every single car, there's a race to secure lithium, and
right.
Every single major auto manufacturer is all of a sudden trying to get lithium at the exact same time. Electric vehicles just crossed 10% market share, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah,
considering that the global auto manufacturing number, there's around 80 million cars made per year, and now 10% of that is electric vehicle.
And just two years ago, it was more like 2%, right?
Yeah, I think
that's an amazing increase.
Amazing increase.
Yeah.
Now, that's not including other types of transportation, like Class 8 trucks and things like
sure.
that. Like, there's still a much larger transportation industry. But for consumer cars and pickup trucks and things like that, 8 out of 80 million, it's happening fast. And all of those companies that produce the other, 72 million cars, they're all trying to transition them at the same time. And all of that needs a huge, huge amount of lithium. So just to put things into kind of easy to understand numbers, if today there is about 550,000 tons of lithium produced annually, and we're at 10% of the market, that means that we need to produce another 4.5 million tons of lithium per year to fully transition.
Right.
And those are round numbers. A lot of the analysts are saying that we're going to need to get to that 5 million ton per annum number to produce 60 to 70% of the electric vehicles, not even get to the 400.
Right.
So, when you ask me about is the market supplied right now, I mean, for the price that lithium is at, yes. Do I think the price of lithium will come down a little bit? Probably. I mean, $70,000 to $80,000 a ton is a very expensive proposition.
Yes, it is.
And that's why we haven't seen a super affordable EV yet, right? Like, I think 40,000 to 45,000 is probably the cheapest EV. You can look at the Model 3s. Maybe there's some other companies that are hovering around that price. Right. So we haven't seen a $20,000 EV yet. And you might be able to make a $20,000 EV that has a very short range. But if you want a $20,000 EV that has a comparable range of, you know, 300 plus miles per charge, and as battery technology gets better, hopefully that'll go up to 500 plus miles per charge, then you need the same size battery, right?
Right.
And if lithium is that expensive, then, you know, that doesn't look too favorable for a $20,000 car. So all these things kind of work together. And part of what EnergyX is working on is to, or everything that we're working on is to improve the processing and the manufacturing methods so that lithium is more easily produced and supplied, so that we can kind of control that cost factor a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, when I was there and toured your facility in Austin, you were focused. Your efforts were really centered on some pilot projects in the lithium triangle in South America. I assume that's probably still the focal area for your business.
Yeah, you know, we when you came and toured, we had just wrapped up a pilot plant in South America in the lithium triangle. That was in Bolivia. And that was really what we consider an MVP, a minimum viable product, something that we, you know, taking the leap from developing a technology in a laboratory that is a super controlled environment, you control all the variables, and then putting something out into the field in a real world operating environment is In our industry, that's the biggest step, going from the lab into the field. And we crossed that threshold when we put our pilot into the field. And we operated that pilot for 5 months, 24/7. You know, these things run, doesn't matter if it's day or night, right?
Yeah.
They run 24/7. And we hit all of our KPIs, our key performance indicators, over that 5 month period. And we said, okay, now we need to scale this up. So right now, and over the past 6 months, at the end of 2022 into 2023, we've been building larger systems that we call demonstration plants that are a factor of 20. So 20 times the capacity production, actually even more, about 30x the scale that we can put into the field. And we're not only doing one of those, we're doing five of those. So we've gotten to the point where so our whole business is around validating our technology on brines, right? How do we extract lithium from this water that it's dissolved in? And you know, it's easy to ship a few hundred liters of water or solution to our labs in Texas. It's a little bit more difficult to ship 10 cubic meters, which each cubic meter is one ton. So it's a little bit more difficult to ship 10 tons of brine. It's it's impossible to ship 1,000 tons of brine, right? So That is the scale that we're now going to, something that can process thousands of tons of brine. So those need to be in the field, and they need to be remotely close to the resource, like where you're pumping that brine up in wells. We basically had too much demand to put a demonstration plant on every single customer site who wanted one. So what we ultimately decided was it was best to create regional test beds that were somewhere centralized in the proximity of high customer density, so that, you know, it's easy to ship or transport one truckload of brine, even, you know, a 7 hour drive. Like you could do that daily, right? It's impossible to take a truckload of brine every day from Argentina to Texas, or even in California to Texas, right? You can't do that every day. So we're building these systems that are 30 times the size, that we'll put at these demonstration test beds. And we have, we're building one to serve the Argentinian market. We're building one to serve the Chilean market. And then we're building a few in the United States as well. So given the new Inflation Reduction Act,
that was my next question. Yeah.
we'll lead right in.
Good.
Given the passing of that, that's really incentivized companies like us to focus on the US market. So where before, there's no question that the resources in South America are better. They have higher lithium concentrations. They have less impurities. They have less challenges. But now, given the IRA, there's a ton of incentive for us to focus on the U.S. market. And there's several good resources that are in the U.S., being in California, the Great Salt Lake area, right, and in between in Nevada.
Isn't there one in Arkansas too? Some big brine formation? Yep.
So in Arkansas into Texas, it's called the Smackover Formation.
Yeah, Smackover, right.
Up in Pennsylvania, you have the Marcellus Formation. These areas have decent concentrations of lithium, and they're prime opportunities for us to validate our technology on, these different streams, whether it's geothermal brine in California or produced water that is coming off the, a byproduct of some process in Arkansas or what have you. So we're planning demonstration test beds in those areas as well. And then that's the last step before commercialization.
Fantastic. And of course, one of the things, other aspects of all this is the Biden administration's, goal of establishing supply chains with that are free of China entanglements with countries like Chile and Argentina. I mean, there's nothing to say if this gets scaled up eventually to a big enough project down in South America. There's nothing to say that the lithium extracted there can't be shipped to serve the U.S. market as well. The U.S. market is going to ultimately, if it all goes as planned, be, well, maybe not the biggest on the planet, but one of the two or three biggest on the planets, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be. We have huge auto making centers in the U.S. and obviously, Tesla leading the EV revolution is a big part of that. I think GM and Ford are doing everything they can to catch up, and they have different challenges in transitioning their production as opposed to Tesla just creating new production. But that the statement you made about the Biden administration, the Inflation Reduction Act is obviously a great piece of legislation to incentivize companies like us to focus on domestic production, domestic supply chain, or supply chain that is with free trade partners, i.e. Chile, right? But right. I think that where the Biden administration is coming up a little bit short is in three areas. One is the next step after the IRA is permitting. So you can't put forth a piece of legislation like the IRA and then not permit all of these new projects that are producing natural resources, right?
Yeah.
So I think that that will come. I'm sure there are a lot of smart people that are working hard behind the scenes, putting what I just said into reality, and things like that take time. It can't happen the next week after the IRA is passed, but I think there's a fundamental mindset that needs to be changed there, that like, if we want to keep these supply chains domestic and not have to rely on China for processing our natural resources, we need to be able to, you know, cut through the red tape and more quickly permit and approve, in terms of environmental regulation, some of these projects. So that's number one. Number two is that even with some of our free trade partners like Chile, I think that there needs to be more support from a governmental standpoint in improving those relationships. Like, there was the chancellor of Germany just made a trip down to Chile and Argentina, and that was the president of Argentina, the chancellor being the highest position, that's what it's called in Germany.
Right.
And now Chile is doing all this special legislation specifically for Germany and the German auto industry. So that's all going to go benefit Volkswagen, BMW, and Mercedes, as opposed to benefiting our supply chain for GM, Ford, Tesla, right? So, you know, that's, there could be more done in terms of political activism in strengthening relationships, or, you know, it's a new president down in Chile, right? So
right.
I doubt that he's ever met any, I don't know for sure, but I doubt he's ever met any super high ups, and certainly hasn't met Biden. I don't know.
Probably
the
not.
Secretary, yeah. Or the, you know, Secretary of State, or Jennifer Granholm, or any of these people had actually taken the time to go meet this guy and, you know, push forward the relations and things like that.
On the other hand, he probably has met some officials from China, right? Because China just did the big deal with Bolivia.
Probably.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that leads to my last point, where you just said China just did a big deal with Bolivia. I mean, Chile is obviously a very important player in terms of the metals or the supply chain that goes into batteries, right? They have a lot of copper, they have a lot of lithium. But the next two most important are Bolivia and Argentina. And the United States doesn't even have free trade agreements or any sort of framework structure with those countries. And that is a huge, huge oversight. And China is kicking our butt in Argentina and Bolivia. And these are countries that are literally part of the Americas, and the U.S. should have extremely strong relations with trade agreements. We should be helping them in terms of their economies, inflation, and in return, you know, we have open access and you know, better exchanges with the battery materials that we're seeking. So it's just a huge miss.
It is, and it's such a shame, because all of that goes all the way back into the 1950s, when the CIA was meddling with the governments in those countries. And everyone should read a biography about John Dulles sometimes. Alan Dulles, one of the early directors of the CIA, and all the crazy stuff our CIA was doing in those Latin American countries during those years. And we're still paying a price for it in terms of terrible relationships with some of those countries. And it probably was, really one of the underlying reasons why China was able to pretty much lock up Bolivia and that lithium resource there. Just last month, actually. That was just in late January, yeah. I guess. So anyway, yeah, I agree with you completely. And this is not the Biden administration's fault. This is something that's bled through 12, 13 different presidential administrations since Eisenhower. So anyway, I'm sorry to get us off on a tangent there. It's a real sore spot for me, as you can tell.
Yeah. I mean, it's not Biden's fault. It's not like any particular person's fault. It's just, it's the lack of action, though. It's like, you know, Biden could change that if he wanted to. Right?
Yes. Yes.
It's the lack of action.
No, I completely agree. And it's something that's really going to have to be paid attention to if we're going to have success in this area, ultimately, because as you pointed out here, the demand for lithium is going to, I guess the IEA's projection, you're going to have to increase lithium supply by 900% by 2035. And, you know, we've never done that with a major mineral before globally. And so that's an amazing goal that is going to be very difficult to achieve. And it's going to take that kind of diplomatic effort, not just in South America, but a lot of parts of the world to get it done.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time, but I want to give you a chance to talk about what are your next steps? Where do you go from here, say, in the next year or two? To get to that inflection point where you're ready to really scale this effort up.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're focused on every day. We are building these larger systems at our facilities in Texas. Pretty exciting, you know. I've never built something this size, so. Building larger systems and getting ready to deploy these into the field at these test beds is what our whole team is working on. And it's, you know, we've proven our process at kind of this mini pilot scale. Now it's all about scaling that up, showing that we can do it at a quantity or a volume of brine processing that is, you know, about 1 cubic meter per hour for 1,000 hours. So processing 1,000 cubic meters of brine, and maybe more, maybe several thousand. You can do 24 a day, right? So about 1,000 hours is about 42 days. Maybe you do that for 2,000 cubic meters, which is, you know, so almost... Maybe you do it for 100 days, right? Which is almost 3,000 cubic meters. But this is the size of processing that all of the large customers that we're in dialogue with have told us is the last step before commercialization. So we're building these systems, and you know, this year we'll have these test beds in the field. And we'll work on validating that over the next, you know, 12 months. And then it's to full commercialization, building facilities that can process 10, 20, 50,000 tons of lithium per annum. So this next step is critical for us to prove our process on, you know, the demonstration scale, which is TRL-8 technology readiness level 8, which is the last step before TRL-9, which is full commercialization. So it's about, you know, all the scientific risk is behind us. Like we've unequivocally proven that our technologies extract, separate, and refine lithium. Now it's about the engineering challenges that come with scaling the technology and making sure that it works at scale. On a demonstration level, and then ultimately on a commercial level.
Well, fantastic, man. I sure do appreciate your time. Thank you again for doing this with me today. And I'll be back in touch in the future, man, for another update. And I wish you the best of luck.
Anytime, David. Great seeing you.
Thank you, sir. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. This is David Blackman. Thanking the Sandstone Group for hosting our show and our extraordinary producer, Eric Perel. That's all for this time, and we'll see you down the road.